From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
The inhumanity is clear. Their ideologies are bankrupt. No grievance or cause can justify such violence.
That was UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon speaking at Sunday's opening of the G20 summit in Antalya, Turkey, about the recent attacks in Paris, which left at least 128 people dead and hundreds injured. He cautioned that as the international community formulates a response to the attack, care should be taken to ensure that the response will not exacerbate the situation.
We will be discussing terrorism at this summit. I will stress to world leaders that our response needs to be robust, but always within the rule of law and with respect for human rights. Otherwise, we will only fan the fire we are trying to put out.
The Paris attacks seized center stage at the summit, whose agenda had originally been planned to tackle economic issues, as Press TV's Rashan Siglam reports.
The world's 20 major economies G20 summit is underway in the coastal Turkish city of Antalya. The two-day summit was initially supposed to deal with economic and tourism issues. However, the recent terrorist attacks in the French capital has forced the participants to discuss terrorism more than economy. According to a draft statement, the group condemned the Paris attacks and vowed to remain united in fighting terrorism. They pledged to tackle the financing channels of the terrorists by enhancing cooperation and freezing assets. The heads of states at the summit also expressed concern about the growing flow of foreign terrorists into Syria. The United States and Turkey have long been facing criticism for backing anti-Damascus terrorists in Syria. Now U.S. President Barack Obama says Washington and Ankara will boost their efforts to combat the Daesh Takfiri terrorists. Obama said the killings in Paris were an attack on the civilized world, pledging to make more efforts to bring about an end to Syria's civil war. He made the comments in a meeting with Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan on the sidelines of the G20 summit. Erdogan also said the terrorist attacks in Paris shows the time for words is now over.
The economy is the main interest of the G20, but it cannot be independent of political, social, or cultural problems, and it is never independent of human life. The terrorist attacks that have been witnessed by Turkey over the last 4 months, and the attack that took place in Paris, and the incidents of fighting against terrorism in Syria are very apparent reasons for that.
The United States describes Turkey as one of its major allies in fighting against terrorism, but many accuse Ankara of supporting terrorist groups who keep killing civilians in both Iraq and Syria. Rashan Saglam, Press TV, Istanbul.
Journalist and political commentator Max Egan said that those at the G20 who may be looking for the sources of Islamic State's funding and other support need only look around the summit's meeting room.
If they are really serious about tackling terrorism and stopping the financing of all these Daesh terrorists that are rampaging across the Middle East, they're in a pretty good location, because most of the people who are financing are in the room with them at the G20 summit. So it will be interesting to see what steps they're going to take, because, well, let's face it, the funding for all of these terrorists is coming out of Turkey, it's coming out of Saudi Arabia, it's coming out of Israel, it's coming out of the West.
Russia's President Vladimir Putin told reporters at a press conference at the summit that he's shared Russian intelligence about Islamic State financing with his G20 colleagues, which showed that the terrorist group appears to be receiving financing from 40 countries, including some G20 members. Putin also told the journalists that he had shown Western governments photos taken from space and from Russian aircraft of motorcades of ISIS refueling vehicles stretched for dozens of kilometers. He compared the convoys to gas and oil pipeline systems, saying that, quote, from a height of 4,000 to 5,000 meters, they stretch beyond the horizon, closed quote. On Monday, France's President François Hollande called for changes to the French constitution that would allow for the imposition of special measures after a declaration of a state of siege. The proposed changes to Article 36, which now provides for the imposition of martial law for a period of 12 days without parliamentary approval, would allow the implementation of additional extraordinary measures including the revocation of citizenship.
We should be able to enable someone who has attacked the fundamental interests of our nation or committed an act of terrorism. The person must be, we must be able to deprive that person of the French nationality on the condition that the person has another nationality. We should also be able to prevent someone with dual citizenship from returning to our territory if the person constitutes a risk of terrorism.
President Barack Obama also spoke with the press at the G20 summit in Turkey.
On the diplomatic front, we've been consistently working to try to get all the parties together to recognize that there is a moderate opposition inside of Syria that can form the basis for a transition government, and to reach out not only to our friends but also to the Russians and the Iranians who are on the other side of this equation to explain to them that ultimately an organization like ISIL is the greatest danger to them as well as to us.
And although Friday's attacks in Paris have dominated the news media for the past days here in the West, that attack was only one of a number of terrorist attacks claimed by the group. A day earlier, a twin suicide bombing occurred in the southern suburbs of Lebanon's capital, Beirut, killing at least 43 people and injuring at least 239. The Islamic State claimed responsibility for those bombings on its Twitter account. And 2 weeks earlier, the group reportedly claimed responsibility for the downing of a Russian passenger jet over Egypt's Sinai Peninsula, killing the 217 passengers aboard. Since September, the group has also claimed responsibility for terrorist actions in Saudi Arabia, Bangladesh, and Yemen. For more on all of that, we spoke with our analysts, Mark Sloboda at the Moscow State University in Moscow, and Eric Dreitzer in New York via Skype Sunday. Paris, let's start there.
All right. Well, first thing we have to say is that our sympathies and our concerns and prayers are, of course, with the French people and the citizens of so many other countries, from Chile to Mexico to the United States to Britain, that died in the tragedy early this weekend in the attacks in Paris. As WikiLeaks put it, tweeting earlier, well, I guess it was yesterday, the entirely predictable events due to France's interference supporting extremists in Syria and in Libya. That said, nothing justifies what happened. It doesn't justify it in Paris. It doesn't justify the attacks, the suicide attacks in Beirut,
right,
which most of the world's, at least the West press, has ignored. It doesn't justify the suicide attacks a day earlier in Baghdad. It doesn't justify the bombing of a girls' school by moderate West-backed rebels in Latakia, the daily attacks in Syria. It must be said that the French people tragically have had to sip from the same cup, that the bitter cup that the people of Damascus have had to drink from for the last 4 years now. So our sympathies go with the families, those who have lost their lives, but our job here is not to hold hands and issue Hallmark platitudes, but to discuss causes, raise understanding, and to suggest solutions.
Right. I agree with that completely.
This is a big step for, if we go with the assumption that this is ISIS, and that is an assumption. Certainly the French government has been quick to place that blame. They have also evidently, through several channels, claimed responsibility for it. My biggest argument in favor of that is that no one else has claimed responsibility for it,
right,
and it is a terrorist act. So bar any other evidence of states having a role in this, which must remain in the realm of conspiracy theory for the moment. We'll go with the working assumption that it was ISIS. And if it was ISIS, it is crossing the Rubicon.
I just want to note before we jump into the ISIS question, this issue of justification I think is important because in fact I appreciate that Mark opened the show and his comments by talking about our sympathies being with French people and the fact that it doesn't justify and nothing justifies any of the attacks, whether it's Paris or Beirut or Damascus or whatever. Of course, all of that is important, but I think it's important to note that here in the West, at least, the media does justify certain attacks while claiming that others are unjustifiable. So, for instance, in Paris, the attacks are considered unjustifiable, wanton acts of carnage, inhuman barbarism, etc., etc., etc. Of course, it is that. However, if you were to read the headlines of the bombing in Beirut, for example, they don't note anything about barbarism or anything like that. The headlines read something to the effect of, and I'm mostly quoting here, something to the effect of twin suicide bombs attack Hezbollah stronghold.
Hezbollah bastion.
Yeah, bastion, and,
bastion.
And stronghold and things like this. Now, to me, I think that there is a not so subtle implication there, and the implication is a justification. In other words, yes, this is horrific, yes, people have been blown to pieces, children killed, blah blah blah, but in reality this was a stronghold of a terrorist organization, therefore it's justified. So I think that this is something that really needs to be brought out into the light of day. What does justification actually look like?
Let's add the Russian airplane too. I mean, the same story there.
Same thing. Exactly. So, you know, within an hour or two of the Russian airplane being downed, once people started bringing up the ISIS question, it was inevitably not that this was an act of barbarism and inhuman, you know, terrorism, but rather that this was blowback from Russia's intervention in Syria, Russia's engagement with the Syrian government, etc. So there, when we talk about justification,
despite the fact that it was ISIS whom the West is also attacking.
So I think that this is a very real issue. What does justifying terrorism look like, and how does the media actually do that? Because sometimes it's somewhat subtle, and it might be lost on some people.
Well, we need a definition of terms.
Not all victims of terrorism are equal.
Let's talk about what blowback means. That's really a bastardization of the term blowback to apply it to the Russians. That would be retribution, not blowback. The Russians did not empower ISIS. They didn't arm them. They didn't fund them. They didn't buy their oil. They didn't buy their antiquities.
Yes. I mean, and the whole stew that has led to the emergence of ISIS and has, because it would be incorrect to say that the French government has directly armed ISIS. No, they've done it indirectly. They've armed and funded what they call moderate rebels, these 31 flavors of jihad running around Syria, conducting attacks in Syria daily, reminiscent of what happened in Paris this week. The Syrians have had to endure it for four long years now. To condemn one and not the other is inhuman, or it is dehumanizing. The Russian President Vladimir Putin has said before, this game of dividing up some terrorists as good terrorists and other terrorists as bad terrorists, it's what has led us to exactly this point. And I think I have a quote here from Bashar al-Assad, the Syrian president, who said that terrorism is not a winning card that you can play when it suits you and stick back in your pocket when it doesn't. Yeah. Terrorism is like a scorpion. It stings you when you least expect it. Yep. And that's exactly what we saw.
Yep. You know, I'm going to go back to a definition of terms. Blowback is, for example, when in 1979 you grab a bunch of medieval aristocrats in Afghanistan and arm and train them and give them rocket launchers and teach them insurgency techniques and fund them and place them in various places afterwards. And then in 2001, the very same people crash planes into your buildings. That's blowback.
Yeah, and I think that it's also important to remember too that when we're talking about the way in which this has all happened and the way in which France is implicated in this, there's something that is lost, I think, oftentimes in the narrative. I mentioned it repeatedly on RT, on Press TV, and any other chance that I got. Specifically, the fact that any fighters in Syria who may, you know, veterans of the war in Syria who would conduct terrorist actions in France undoubtedly have some kind of connection to France. Now, we don't know what that connection is. We do know, documented by the New York Times, the Washington Post, BBC, and many others, that French intelligence has been on the ground in Syria since at least 2011. I mean, it's not a secret. Anybody who knows how to do a Google search can find this information. While Mark was talking, I have the headline right here. BBC, 10th of September, 2012. Syria defector Manaf Klaas hints at French intelligence aid. Talks about in the article, French intelligence on the ground in Syria providing arms and providing funds and providing helping people to get in and out of Syria. I mean, this is no secret what the French are doing on the ground there, just as what the US and the British have been doing on the ground as well. And I think we should also assume Israeli Mossad for sure. So when we're talking about France's involvement in Syria, I think it's unfair to say that France is only, you know, and I know Mark wasn't implying this, he was saying specific to ISIS, but it's unfair to say that France is only indirectly involved on the ground. France is directly involved and have been from the very beginning. Not only that, France is the former colonial power in a lot of places, in North Africa, and in the Middle East, Syria, Lebanon particularly. So there's a very clear and obvious reason why you would have fighters who are fleeing the battlefield, who don't want to get their, you know, blown up by Russian bombs or whomever, who are fleeing into Europe, end up in France. So not only is this coming back on the French, I think, and it's entirely predictable, I think that in many ways the French intelligence services, who are doing a disservice to the French people, in many ways have brought this on France.
Well, and then let's go back to February 24th, 2011, the Pakistan Observer, which reported U.S., U.K., and French troops landed in Benghazi in Libya, which is at the beginning of the entire trouble there. So it shows...
And who are they working with?
They were working with exactly these same terrorist groups that overran Libya and have been active in Syria since almost that same period of time.
Let's talk about what they call foreign fighters. What they mean by that is jihadists who travel from other countries to Syria to wage jihad against the Syrian people. And according to the Washington Post, as of January, so it's quite a bit out of date, we can expect the numbers a little higher than this, more than 10,000 fighters, jihadists from Europe, just from EU alone, have traveled to Syria. The most out of continental Europe, out of Europe, 1,200 of them, again only from January, come from France. And the French government, like most of the governments of Europe, up until maybe the last year, have done nothing to dissuade or stop these people from going to Syria. The only question on their minds was, well, if they come back, mm-hmm. well, if they come back, what, they might do some of what they were doing in Syria at home. And this is exactly, you know, all indications that, as with the earlier Charlie Hebdo attack, is that some of these people were involved in Syria. And they have indeed come home. And it would be really facetious of the French government to, you know, claim that they don't have a responsibility in what happened because of this. I found an interesting poll. I want you guys to tell me what you think of this. Rossiya Sivonia, the Russian state news agency, commissioned a poll by the reputable ICM, who conducted a poll in France a year ago, and other European countries, of support for ISIS. And the results of the poll were that some 15-16% of the French population supports ISIS, and that among 18 to 24 year olds, that number jumps to 24%, I believe.
Ouch.
Now, I have serious problems with that poll, because that's almost, that's at least, if not more, than the entire Muslim population of France, which is somewhere between 10 and 15% by best estimates. France doesn't like census taking of the number of Muslims because of their politically correct ideology of multiculturalism, etc. But let's assume it's just a fraction of that. Because it's one of the questions. The methodology of this poll was found to be good. The question was, do people even know a year ago what ISIS was, when ISIL, it was phrased as Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant. Do they even know what it is when they're answering the question?
I just want to interject if I could. Also, I haven't seen that poll. I don't know. But polls can also be very deceptive.
I assume it's just a fraction of that myself. I assume that there's some problems with the poll. But even a fraction of the populations of Europe supporting ISIS in whatever form should terrify the people responsible for security in the EU. Yeah. There's just numbers out of the French government last night. They say that the French intelligence is tracking 2,000 people in France that it suspects of being jihadists, that it regards as jihadists, and another 4,000 to 5,000 that are in immediate danger of radicalization. I think it's an extremely dangerous.
Well, let me say this, okay? I hear everything that's being said, but I'm also a little bit hesitant to ascribe let's say dangerous motives to somebody who expresses some sympathies for ISIS. I think, look, they're ISIS is, literally the scum of the earth. I mean, this is the worst form of barbarism, inhuman, etc. It deserves all condemnation. So don't paint me as anybody who wants anything other than their total destruction. What I am saying, though, is, 50, 60 years ago, people stood up in front of the U.S. Congress and talked about the looming danger of communist agents all throughout the United States. There were thousands of communists who expressed sympathy for the Soviet Union and for communism who you know, support it, etc. Now, did they represent a mortal threat to the United States? Well, if you listen to Senator McCarthy, they did. But I think in retrospect, that's not only overblown, I think it's somewhat illusory. Right. And so I'm simply cautioning people against thinking that someone who expresses quote-unquote support for that ideology, someone who may be disaffected, disenchanted, maybe unstable, who knows, it necessarily represents a threat to the country in which they reside. I don't necessarily buy that.
Let's look at this in the political context of Europe,
but yes,
at the moment, because we've got, regardless of what it actually represents, there's the perception of what it represents.
That's
and that
true.
Happens within the context of the polarization of various European societies, both outside of the recent refugee crisis, quote unquote, and also, of course, the polarization is taking place over economic issues, primarily, particularly austerity and some of the changes on the ground in the political configuration in Europe. You've got a polarization of politics with the right rallying somewhat against austerity, but now over immigration, and the left rallying over austerity, particularly seeing forward motion in Portugal this past week, a resurgence of that in Greece with Syriza supporting the strike, the general strike in Greece, and of course the Spanish elections looming.
Yeah, I the polarization issue is huge, and I think that it's something that really needs to be addressed, because of course there's two ways that you'll have a right wing, you know, conservative, whatever, nationalist reaction here. On the one hand, obviously in France, this is going to benefit significantly Marine Le Pen and the Front National. They're going to undoubtedly capitalize on this. It'll strengthen their right flank. It'll strengthen their position even among quote unquote moderates and centrists in France, who are I think obviously justifiably mortified by what's happened. At the same time, this is also going to bolster the fascist right in Europe, and I think that that is clear. Whether you're talking Golden Dawn in Greece, whether you're talking Nazis in Ukraine, or whether you're talking the Hitler worshippers of former Soviet republics in the Eastern European space, be it Hungary or what have you. So I think that that is a phenomenon that is certainly going to be strengthened, and Le Pen is probably benefiting from this more than anybody. I'm not suggesting, you know, anything nefarious about that, other than to say that Le Pen is, I think, now going to be front and center in a debate that is going to swing far to the right, and she's going to be, let's say, seen as a voice of reason, which, in my opinion, is a very negative development.
Yeah.
All right, so ISIS. Let's go with the working assumption that this attacks, the downing of the Russian airliner in Egypt, A321, the attacks in Beirut, Baghdad, Latakia. Let's assume that this is ISIS. This has been described, I think, very correctly in the pages of the New York Times as ISIS crossing the Rubicon. Up till now, ISIS, which did emerge out of Al-Qaeda in Iraq, transplanted to Syria and the chaos of the civil war and jihad there. But they have been primarily concerned, very interestingly, very divergently from their Al-Qaeda, sometimes allies, sometimes foes, as being principally involved about territory, about taking and holding a caliphate and the very religious and political implications for Salafism of a caliphate versus an underground terrorist group or dictator-ruled Arabic states that pay lip service to Salafism. So this is them, as it were, moving from concentrating on taking, holding ground and building their caliphate to what Salafists, jihadists like to refer to as the far enemy, the West and other countries outside of the Islamic immediate Islamic world or their immediate area of concern. And that is a real game changer for ISIS. And I would like to propose that the reason that they're doing, we should talk about why, that they're doing this is to lure the West into a large ground invasion of Syria and Iraq, because that would fulfill their apocalyptic vision, which is extremely important by all accounts to their particular brand of Salafist poison, of a final battle between the forces of the caliphate and Rome, which is in modern days depicted as the West, in northern Syria, outside of Aleppo. The Quran's very specific about identifying even to the place and so on. So this is what they're doing. This is they're changing. This is why they're doing it is because they have been stagnating in terms of territorial expansion, reaching the limits of the power vacuum that they can expand to in Iraq and Syria. So they're going global.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.